Welcome to the fourth episode of Does Your Favorite Song Suck? This is the podcast where we talk about 2,000 hit songs from the 80s and 90s and try to figure out whether they actually suck or not. My name is Spencer Owen. I am the host of this show. And I am here today with a lovely gentleman by the name of Chris Osmundson.
Oh, thanks. You nailed the pronunciation of my name and that I'm a lovely gentleman. So thank you very much.
I didn't know that you could mispronounce that name.
Oh,
can
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, I mean, if you're seeing it written on a piece of paper, it can catch a lot of people up.
I think I'm just someone who I don't like to enumerate the ways in which I'm clearly a savant, but I think I am a savant in the way that if I see a name as spelled, I do a pretty good job with it,
That's good.
I can pretty much remember it after that. I think I'm on point with it.
Nice.
Osmundson.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem
you
so hard.
Did
to
it me. Again.
Okay.
You're
good.
Two for two.
So we're dealing with someone who's deeper into weird stuff than I am. I think, musically speaking.
I don't know about deeper than you are into it, but I'm into it deep.
I'll say that you're wearing an Anal Staircase shirt right now, which is the band Coil.
Yes.
It also does say Coil. It doesn't just say Anal Staircase on it.
That's true. It's going to be the next internet sensation. You're going to see John Goodman in the shirt. You're going to see all sorts of celebrities in the shirt. So order one today.
Are you saying that this shirt is actually like a new pressing? Like it's something that you can get? Because I know that those are out there.
No, I think I wish I could remember the art. It is like somebody who made the shirt.
Okay.
I bought it at a pop-up head shop in Chinatown a couple of years ago.
Whoa!
And I bought it because I kind of like Coil, but also it was an affordable shirt. So
it's the perfect Venn diagram. That shirt falls
it's
right
in a very cheerful, not very like goth color palette.
It looks nice.
Yeah.
It looks good. And it does have the phrase anal staircase, which is really...
That's a fun thing to put on and go out in public and interact with people.
Definitely.
Because a lot of people don't catch it, but when they do, you know. You know the moment they read the shirt.
I have always thought that as a phrase, it couldn't be more confusingly evocative. Like,
yeah.
it's such a beautiful series of syllables. It's very poetic.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't really... It couldn't mean less to me. It
sure.
really couldn't mean less to me. And I feel like the people behind Coil, John Balance, what's the other guy?
I can't pull a name.
But they must have had some image.
Sure, I think they did.
In mind. Anyway, this is actually a perfect conversation to have at the beginning of this particular episode.
Great. I have no idea what we're about to talk about other than it's one of 2,000 songs of music.
Yes, so I think we've decided, my producer and I, on some level, that we need to ambush people on this show. You know, if it doesn't happen, if it happens that the person knows what song they're going to be talking about, that's totally fine. But I think the level of ambush is fun because I was also ambushed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I selected the song, I was like, I had no idea what this is going to be. And then
yeah.
I try to maintain that level of not knowing what it is or what it's going to be until we listen to it. So you're getting that organically.
I'm excited.
I guess we can talk a little bit about, I'm trying to decide whether we should talk more about, because I'm new at like hosting on without training wheels here. So I'm like, should we talk about like, what the hell is up with you? Like, you know, you live in LA, you work at a really hip record store.
I do live in LA and I work at a record store.
Jackknife?
Yes.
Correct?
In Atwater Village.
Do you want to sell it? Do you want to send people there?
It's a great shop. It's got some like local notoriety for its wall of cassette tapes.
Ooh.
Which people remark upon on an almost daily basis.
I've seen
They say things like, oh my god, I haven't seen this since, and they'll usually like drop a good old like Sam Goody or some other, you know. A lot of times people like to bring their kids in and give them a pop quiz on, hey, what do you think this is?
Meaning that this was their errand for the day, or like not their errand, but like
no, they like noticed
a destination.
Yeah, it's like, you know, a lot of it's a nice neighborhood, a lot of families walking around.
Sweet.
Yeah, but it gets, you know, we get people who come in definitely for the novelty of the spot.
Right.
But it's a good record store. It's a very small amount of space, and I think what we're able to do with that small amount of space is it's solid.
I have been a shopper there one time, and I don't think that was enough times. I would like to go back.
Nice.
And shop more there. Yeah, it's a great place. Oh, I bought a Jane Syberry record there. I remember that now.
That's a solid selection.
I really like Jane Syberry.
That's some good 80s weirdness, high-level art pop.
Yeah, I think that, well, because she gets compared to, like, Laurie Anderson. She gets compared to Kate Bush. And I think that she is, and I guess Joni Mitchell is another person people compare her to. I think all of those are valid,
mm-hmm.
Which makes her a really interesting artist.
Yeah.
I think the one I bought there was especially novel to me because it was an album of hers I like from, like, the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Bound by the Beauty, which is hard to find. It's hard to find a record like that.
Yeah.
At all.
Like, it's fun to come across those, like, what's basically, like, a dollar bin record to most people that is just, like, you'll probably never come across it again.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
No one would think, see Bound by the Beauty, totally unremarkable cover.
Yeah.
And think, like, oh, there's some great songs on there. And, yeah. Like, this person is pretty strange, auteur-type person. And then you also have a musical duo. We were actually just catching up on this before we started recording. What's the name of the duo?
House 2. Yes.
The premise of that, I have a theory I don't think I ever asked.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like that the band, it's gonna be incredible if this is correct. It sounds like it's correct. The band is the sequel to the movie House, the Japanese movie House.
So there's a couple answers. One is that making musical group names is hard and
very difficult.
Usually very dumb. So we picked something that was like not necessarily dumb, but not trying to be cool.
Yeah.
And it was partially an imagined sequel to that Japanese film.
Yes.
But also there is an actual film called House 2.
Oh.
That is not a sequel to that Japanese film. That we did not know about when we selected that name. But we do like misleading. I think I like doing this more than the other guy who's in the act. I think that I'm more doing it for my own amusement.
Yeah.
The thing we titled our first tape, which is a couple years old now, was Loose Joints, which is like a, you know.
The name of a band.
Yes.
Featuring Arthur Russell.
Exactly. So people see that and get excited and then pick up the tape and don't know what exactly to do with it.
Because you could even say that, like, Loose Joints had sort of a house music feel to them.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Completely misleading.
Yes, yes.
That is very beautiful.
Sure.
I admire it greatly.
You can ask the guy whose record label it's on if it was a beautiful move.
I'll have to ask him at some point.
Yeah, if you ever run into that guy.
I might meet him someday. And then I'll report back on what he says.
Okay. Yeah, let me know. I'd like to know what he thinks.
Yeah.
We don't speak anymore for obvious reasons. If you just do a quick search of my name, his name.
Yes, you'll get a lot of beef. And there's definitely the laughter that you're hearing is not knowing in any way. There's no reason why any one or more than one person in the room would be laughing at this right now.
Absolutely not.
So, with that said, House 2 has a tape, and you guys should listen to it. It's on a record label called Stimulus Progression. It's out there and wonderful.
Yeah. It's out there.
Yeah, it's out there. It's very unlike what we're about to listen to, I think.
Okay.
You know, though, I've been surprised before.
Okay.
I've been surprised before.
So you know the song that we're going to listen to. Have you listened to it yet?
No. We're going to listen to it together. Wow. So that's another thing about the premise of the show is that I don't want to listen. So, like, I talked for a while about Shania Twain in the last week's episode because uncovering I found it necessary to uncover at least what the rest of the album was on, was like. Mm-hmm. Come On Over, which sold 40 million copies and like is like
wow,
an insane yeah. That album is an insane phenomenon. They released 12 singles over the course of 3 years.
12 singles
from that 16
how many
song album.
Okay, there you go. Okay, yeah, not even asked but answered.
Yeah,
there we go.
16. And
how about those other four? Ooh,
you know,
probably real bad.
They're
right?
on the they're. I think the other four. I don't know which ones they've released. I was going to try and actually talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the thing with it is I really enjoyed uncovering that.
Yeah.
But I, other than like so like the fact that I've listened to that album now.
Yeah.
And know it. Makes me a little bit at a loss for this effect if
sure.
those songs ever come up again in the charts, which
sure.
they might, even though it's yeah. 2,000 songs.
Yeah, but 12 singles.
I know, right? So it's like 2,000 songs and counting down.
Yeah.
So like, even though it's still like almost 2,000, it's still like, Shania's gonna maybe show up again.
Probably.
Randomness, knowing randomness as I do intimately. So, and I mean, like, I don't mean, like, random, like, hilarious random humor. Like, that's so random.
Oh, okay. Then we can edit my laugh out, right?
Yes. No, okay. We can definitely cut that. But I'm thinking more like, yeah, it's all this way of saying, like, okay, so now I know those songs. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Still, it's more fun to, like, not know a single note of what's going to happen
yeah.
before you. Or at least not have heard it in a long, long time.
Yeah. No, the sheer, like, the fact that it is, like, 2,000 songs that you guys are staring down at is insane.
Yeah.
And that seems like a lot, and then I start thinking about, like, just the, like, infinite world that is just commercial pop music, and that's still such a tiny little fraction of that.
It's way larger than that. That's... I saw you kind of clutch your chest a little bit there to be like... You're overwhelmed
yeah.
by the notion of how much pop music
there are 2,000 songs.
There are at least 2,000 songs.
Oh no!
There are 2,000. There are 2,000 songs plus the 15 other songs on Shania Twain's "Come On Over."
Wow,
that's what I know so far. My knowledge will continue to expand the more I uncover what else there is on this earth, amazing earth. I'm sorry, I should have said only 3 more songs, because maybe to the other 11 are part of the 2000. Anyway, moving on to the topic of this show. How about that?
Okay.
1991. Any gut reactions? The year 1991.
1991. Yeah, sure. Let's see. I was 9 years old.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So was I.
I would have been 8 turning 9.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
No.
That's what you got.
Yeah, that's what I got.
The top 100 featured 100 songs.
Okay.
This is number 28 on that
okay.
chart. I have no idea what, how to, like, again, like, number 28 on 1991, like,
yeah.
it's hard to guess that, right? Like, it's hard to try to think of what
yes.
that might be.
That's like, yeah, that's a real, I feel like any year and chart number you would throw out, I'd be like, yeah, I think all of it is going to be.
Well, so like the only specific that was funny was that like when we did When Doves Cry,
sure,
we were like, that's going to be Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And then it was Prince. So yeah. we were really, we were pretty close. This song is called Every Heartbeat, and it's by an artist named Amy Grant.
I know the name Amy Grant.
Okay.
I don't believe I am familiar with the song Every Heartbeat.
Do you know any other songs by Amy Grant off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head, no. She is a Christian artist.
She was. She started out as one, and I'm sure, I mean, I don't know. I don't know her life.
well,
but
it's
she
a good
might
thing
be...
you have me here, because that's one of my specialties.
You know the life of Amy Grant,
but not
her music.
The music. Yeah.
yeah. Well, thank God. I have knowledge of one song by Amy Grant.
Okay.
I may have heard more of her songs, but I think I have
sure.
knowledge of one song, which is Baby Baby.
Baby Baby.
Which goes, baby, baby, Do 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 do. And it has like a Jimmy Jam Terry Lewis kind of like beat.
Nice.
So the fact now, that
was probably before the one we're talking about, right? I always think of her as like an 80s artist, late 80s.
I'm going to guess that that song was like 90 or 91,
I guess 91 is still the late 80s, though, right?
More or less, yeah. Yeah. Like, I think...
It doesn't become the 90s till like maybe 94.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well...
That's how those things work.
In Utero really ushered in the 90s.
Sure.
Nevermind was still racking up those big hair metal points.
Yes.
But
yes.
Then In Utero came along and it was like, hello, 90s.
Hello, 90s.
So Amy Grant's Every Heartbeat is a song that I've never heard as far as I know.
Okay.
And I don't think you have either by evidence from the words you were just saying.
Yeah, no, I'm guessing not. I do one other thing. I guess for 91, I think I was at the tail end of a Beach Boys deep dive. And that was my first, outside of the Beatles, that was my first, like, music, not obsession, but, like, music that I loved.
So this is really cool
that
because...
That I took ownership of.
So this is cool because that means when you were 8 turning 9, you were doing a deep dive into something.
Which meant I bought one Greatest Hits cassette at a Tower Records,
yes,
I think.
Yes, that is the deep dive for a young lad.
Uh-huh.
Basically, yeah. Like, yeah. Greatest Hits tapes, that actually... probably resembles a deeper dive than a lot of kids would like. You bought that, right?
I did.
At age 8?
Yes.
That's kind of unusual.
We had a Beach Boys record in our household. I don't remember which one, but it did not have Kokomo, which was one of the Beach Boys songs I was most into.
Oh, yeah.
I did use the past tense there on purpose.
So your love of Kokomo has not ridden the wave to the present.
I mean, I still can enjoy it.
Yeah, it's kind of good.
It's not what would make or break a Beach Boys purchase for me at this point.
So the record that you had at home, though, it was probably not, like, if I had to hazard a guess, it probably wasn't like the Beach Boys Love You or the Beach Boys Holland.
I'm going to, like, almost entirely say that it's probably Endless Summer.
Okay, yeah.
And I probably got whatever that... Greatest Hits was that came out in the, I think, late 80s with, like, airbrushed, I can still picture the cover, like, airbrushed, like, sunglasses and, like, a cup of soda and, like, a Cadillac and, like, I'm sure palm trees.
All the things I picture when I listen to the Beach Boys Sunflower.
I think it was
Sunflower.
Basically Endless Summer with Kokomo added to it.
That is
because they knew 8 and 9 year olds all over the country just wanted to buy those up.
That was what the Beach Boys were being packaged as by someone, a mystery person, just said Full House in the background, and yeah. That was the era of the Beach Boys at in like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
Like that's what they were being packaged as because the drug damaged years, which I find to be their most valuable. Music, not even part of the history at
right.
that point. Like
right.
publicly speaking, like Mike Love didn't want anything to do with that.
No.
Even though he was there,
yeah,
he didn't want anything to do with that. The culture probably, public probably didn't even want anything to do with that, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think you know. Yeah, I mean, Dennis had died like 82.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a bad. It was,
yeah, it was
the Wilsons
a,
had some bad times.
Yeah, not a good time.
But I reminisce nostalgically for the horrible years they went through when they made all those really good albums.
Yes, I mean great albums.
Amy Grant. You want to listen to Every Heartbeat?
Yeah. After talking about the Beach Boys, let's listen to some Amy Grant.
Okay, let's do it.
Classic case of boy meets girl. Every hour, every day, every heartbeat.
was delighted to find, upon listening, that this song is definitely, I guess I didn't have any doubts that this song would be aesthetically not too different from Baby Baby, the one song that I do know. And of course, it's from the same album. And of course, this album sold 5 million copies. Wow. This was a huge hit. I mean, we're going to find that time and time again that these songs were enormous smashes, or at least from enormous smash albums, because this was the 28th most popular song of 1991, according to the Billboard charts. And I hadn't heard it before. Had you heard it before?
Not to my knowledge. It doesn't... No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I have no memory of hearing it before.
I would like to hear some... I guess I want reactions about the song. But we also have someone in the room who is extremely, like, there for this. Like, neither of us... You can tell from our relative, like, blasé... Like, I currently have a blasé tone, just not about the song, but about the idea of talking about who she was, because I don't... I only know...
Yeah, I believe you and I have probably already said most of what we can say.
Yeah. Christian...
Outside of, high, you know, I think this, I think that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Christian, but then not, or yeah. Then she was maybe still, but she was doing secular. Okay, yeah. So Eve, what, like...
Hi, guys.
You were a huge... Hi, you were Eve. A huge... Eve Sturgis, ladies and gentlemen. You were a huge fan of Amy Grant's, correct?
I loved Amy Grant. I think I would even say I still love Amy Grant, but I have not kept up with her work.
Okay. So since when have you not kept up with her work? I know that you told us something that's very recent.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. I went and I saw her. She just did a show here in Los Angeles at the Greek Theater.
It's amazing that she can do the Greek Theater still.
Yeah. 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 And it was me and, like, a whole lot of women from their churches.
Yeah.
Like, a whole lot of women from their churches who were, like... Like, I was on the young end. I skewed young
so
for
the
that crowd, yeah.
So the people who follow her still are the Christian audience.
Yeah, I think the Christian audience, that were her, they're her fans back then. They were, like, her contemporaries. So they have aged with her.
Right. And so that was your background culturally,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. So Christian church, Christian upbringing, extremely Christian parents and sort of evangelical world. And we listened to K-Love Radio, which was the only radio station we were allowed to listen to. I didn't know there were, like, other stations.
Wow.
That was, I mean, I just thought everyone listened to K-Love. Like, obviously, you would
right.
listen to K-Love.
You gotta listen to K-Love.
And she was
a major staple on K-Love.
Yeah, she was hot on K-Love. And then she also, like, I don't know who to compare her to in the
Christian world,
in the secular world.
Okay,
I couldn't think of the word secular. Tiffany or something, like, of the 80s. That,
right.
Like, I'm a brunette, and Amy Grant is a brunette, so, like, I thought maybe when I was 16, like, if I could just be as pretty as Amy Grant, that
Perfect.
Would be so pretty. And I could wear, I used to have very, like, visceral, like, I would wear a pink turtleneck, and I would have a little cross necklace. Like, in my mind, when I'm 16, that is what I will look like, and that is what I will wear, because that is what Amy Grant...
Will you also sing, like Amy Grant does?
I mean, sure. Yeah. Just be, like, a presence, like she is.
That's so great.
Yeah, and I still remember I got a red, like, Casio Walkman for Christmas, in one package, and I got Amy Grant's Christmas album in another package.
Whoa.
And they came together as like a Christmas gift. And
is this the same Christmas album that you just pulled off of your record shelves?
No.
Okay.
We don't have that one in
There's
vinyl.
Gotta be different
there's,
ones.
Yeah, there's another one where she's wearing like a red velvet cape in the snow. And
I feel like I've seen that cover.
It was during the crossover.
Okay, yeah.
So I remember like very, and we used to, it was also telling everyone earlier that at the church that I went to, it was a denomination that was sort of like an amalgam of very old church traditions. We did sing a lot of hymns and had a lot of the service harkened back to older services. But But then there was like this attempt to modernize, and so Amy Grant songs would be sung in our church, and
that's kind of like that's to me that's incredible, because that's kind of like what if Tiffany's songs were sung in church, except that she just her material just wasn't about Christ, so it just didn't work. Like the only fact that made it relevant was that her songs were, and that she was a cultural phenomenon.
Sing
there.
This song in church,
so
we have to talk about that.
Yeah. Transition is
what
I'm asking.
Right. So the crossover is what we called it.
Yeah. You. By the way, you used the phrase "the crossover" so casually a few seconds ago that I was going to say that has been said before. That's
yeah.
not.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. Also, we had a band. We had a worship band at our church, and I think their name was Crossover.
Incredible.
I digress. But so incredible. Yeah, I remember when Amy Grant, it was like announced that she was going to come out with a secular song for the mainstream audience, and it was Baby Baby. And I still remember one morning very specifically, like in our living room and having the radio on and the people calling in to K-Love to like discuss and debate whether they felt like it would be okay to continue to play her music, her new music that was meant for the mainstream audience, and then and could they play her old music still, knowing that she now has crossed over.
Chris, I'm so sorry. You've been superseded.
No, we crossed over.
The crossover has occurred. Yeah. We're gonna talk about it. I just need to know. This is like everything
we
need
know.
To know.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, and yeah, the and Baby was very controversial.
Yeah.
And since there's like no lyrics about sex specifically, and there's nothing about premarital sex, like she could be married, like you could be a married woman and sing like a love song.
Of course you can.
And
you can call someone baby.
You'd still be a Christian.
Yeah, right.
And remember they played the song and then people called in. And then, yeah. So, and I loved that song. And in the video, she's got puppies.
Amazing.
And then
that draws the line right there for like, you know, it's not this is not a, this sounds like Janet Jackson. It might as well be Janet Jackson, but there's puppies in the video.
Just puppies. She's just like playing with puppies in
yeah.
the whole video.
Yeah. Perfect.
And then
perfect distinction.
And then for this song, Every Heartbeat Bears Your Name, that one was even more like controversial because it's like
really
it's,
interesting
because and I think I have a memory and I could I could totally be wrong, listeners, if you went to that church in Petaluma
in America in 1991
you can tell me, but I think we would sing that song but just sort of the chorus.
Okay.
that one or that repeated thing about my heartbeat bears your name and like stake my claim, like
yes.
That was the, yeah. So she was like, she knew what she was doing. She was walking a line.
So the producer of the song is a fellow named Brown Bannister. We can't overlook that fact any longer. But the reason I wanted to bring it up at this moment, not just because of his name, is that we were just looking at the record, Eve, that you pulled out of the Christmas album from 1983, where she was singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing and Angels We Have Heard on High and a song with a German title. Like, she was, like, legit, like, going in on Christian, you know, like, old Christmas carols. Same name on the back cover, Brown Bannister. Produced that record, too. So it's making me think that, like, there's been no... The attempt to cross her over was made by the same people who produced her up to that point, right? So, like...
Yeah, that it was, like, an agreed-upon everybody on the team, sort of. This wasn't, like, her going off on her own. This was, like, everybody involved.
Yeah, she didn't go rogue. She didn't go pick up a new big label, you know, A&R guy and go, like, yeah, like, this is... I gotta go. I gotta... do this. I gotta go full on into the world.
Right.
No, she's puppies. She's
yes.
Brown Bannister, you know? So like, but, so we were talking about the lyrics to Every Heartbeat, and you said that there might have been singing the chorus. But we, Chris and I, you were talking. We were talking about and a mystery human in the room about how there was a sense that it could be about.
Oh yeah, I mean the
both
God
and man.
Just say it.
Yeah.
About the Lord and the man.
Sure. I mean, there's a
lot
of...
Or the boy.
A lot. Well, I don't know about a lot, but there's definitely what sounded like coded language being used, especially at the beginning of the song, talking about, like, a testimony.
Yes.
And totally. It's like,
I mean, you hear that... I mean, I guess we had the conversation about how we both thought she was a Christian artist, so I hear that, and it definitely pops out, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe if you're just, like... listening to it on the radio, yeah, that might not jump out at you.
I wouldn't know.
Interesting lyrical choice.
It is. It seems very intentional. Like yeah. It seems like for the first verse into the first chorus, you're like, this could be a Christian pop song.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, the first three verses.
Yeah.
But then there's something about what is it? Boy meets girl.
Yeah, like a classic boy meets girl.
Classic case of boy meets girl.
But then what's the lyric after that? It's another. It's not, like, coded. It's just a strange...
I actually liked this couplet.
Moving in the same direction. Yeah. You're not asking for the world. I'm not asking for perfection.
Yeah. Strange,
just
right?
A love that's well-designed.
Just a love that's well-designed.
That's enough. I mean, like, you know, this is a very...
well-designed.
You know, maybe a clinical...
It's clinical. That's, exactly. Yeah. It takes... The form of, like, you want to poetically sing the praise of someone and their, you know, their works.
Sure.
And you take that and you, but then you kind of fit it, you shoehorn it into the secular pop feel where the song could be about a human man.
Yeah.
And I really think also that it's great.
That the song is great?
Yes.
Okay.
I do not think it sucks. What do you think?
I didn't think it sucked.
Okay.
I will say this. We listened to it three times.
Yes.
The first two times, definitely the second time, I was really allowing myself to feel it. I was into the song, and it's something we also talked about during the break. Pretty much almost exclusively due to that funky, funky bass line.
The bass is so good.
That bass line is... I mean, whoever was playing, I'm hoping they have had a long and illustrious session career. Like,
oh, no doubt.
Not that I'm going to say that that was a bad song, but that bass line could be in a much better song.
I have to say I agree with you. I have to say I agree.
And so by the time the third listen happened, it was no longer through, you know, nice stereo speakers. It was out of your phone, and I was just kind of hearing it, you know, out of the corner of my ear.
Yeah.
And, in that presentation of just, like, a flat, like, AM sort of, like, mono sound, if you had asked me, hey, what song is this? I would not have been able to identify it as the song we had just listened to, you know, back to back, like, 5 minutes before that.
I have to say that I had a similar experience because, so we had a lot, you know, we kind of like to, like, listen to the song in our incredibly long history of doing this show. We have a tradition. we like to listen to the song and then have a really fresh take on it, like right away, and talk about it. But we had to take a longer break this time, and so I while we were discussing and trying not to lose the juice for this just conversation, I played it on my phone, and I as I was playing it on my phone, I was like, why am I doing this? Like, this doesn't feel like enjoying or listening to music.
Right.
Like, so yes, through that, like, tinny, you know, radio sounding thing, it doesn't pop to me.
Right.
But as a 3D, like, stereo pop production, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love the way it sounds. It takes all these influences. Kaylin said it reminds me of the Prefab Sprout album, Jordan the Comeback, which I couldn't imagine a better comparison. Both in terms of quality, I love that record, but also, like, it's definitely in the world of, like, it's done such in such a calculated pop way that, like, it's made by people who, like, they are wanting to create a sound, a pop sound for sure. But it also has like that 6/8 sound that so many late 80s pop songs had, like mid to late 80s, like Everybody Wants to Rule the World. There were so many knockoffs of that song, like from that feel. I got a Phil Collins vibe from the horns and general production. The chords were actually unusual, I think, especially in the, this is where the part where I talk about this. The chords were really unusual in the chorus, especially because like the verse ends on a minor key, in a minor key, and then the first chord of the chorus is also minor. It stays minor. It has the, so it's a really unusual transition. Yeah, it's just an unusually written song, actually. But in the way that, not that it's weird, but it's like, it's unusually written in the way that when I hear a pop song like that, I think, oh, they were thinking about this. They were trying to construct this harmonically and, you know, the progression in a way that's compelling to people who like to listen to music. That doesn't surprise me if they had any gospel background. I don't know if they did. I don't. Does Amy Grant's 80s music have anything to do with gospel?
She's from Nashville.
Okay.
So that's what I know. So she's from the South.
But from the music you listen to.
From the music, I don't know that there's any
And from what you hear, you don't hear any gospel in the music? Yeah.
I mean, like, the arrangement of the backing vocals and, like, the presence of that. Oh, there's a crazy part. Yeah, I mean, yeah. When they kind of, like, jettison up into, like, this...
Yeah, near the end, the Amy Grant multi-tracked, I think, just goes nuts.
I raised my arms up to the ceiling, yeah. So I realize that doesn't translate well on the mic.
But it sounds really good when she does it. Like, yeah. It sounds really pretty thrilling, actually. I think the chorus is pretty ingenious, especially when you listen to it. Not as just a melody with lyrics, but as, like, we were talking about in the stereo.
Yeah, no, definitely added, like, a lot of complexity to it, especially because it's, like, there... pretty much the entire song. It's not just like, is that true? Am I misremembering?
What part? The
just like that there's like a chorus of backing vocals.
There,
like,
are these odd backing vocals, silent, like very quiet in the mix, that actually add a weird harmony to the first chord of the chorus.
Yeah.
To where it sounds even, that's probably the thing, Kaylin, I'm pointing to Kaylin, that's probably the thing that makes it sound the most like Jordan the Comeback, is because it has that strange, odd harmony to it in the beginning, and those voices that are like almost inaudible when you hear them on the phone, like you can't hear that at all.
Right.
I've promised never to join another episode of Spencer's podcast for fear of dominating it, but I just want to say the other thing in my sort of non-music sensibility that related to that album to me is it's a 3.5 minute song that to me sounds like it's 5 minutes long, because it's got like a million different ideas that suddenly it transitions into like movements. I mean, like, you guys,
a little bit, yeah.
You guys had this, you were talking at the beginning of the show about the Beach Boys, and suddenly out of the blue comes this sequence in the song for like 10 seconds.
That's longer, just, longer.
But very short.
It's like a bridge. It's like a bridge, yeah.
But like, where was that from? And that sounds like the Beach Boys. Like, they start doing this harmony thing that is very late 60s pop sort of, you know.
It's good too. That part's good. I remember you, thank you for reminding me about that, because I pointed at Chris and I was like, Beach Boys. I was like, it's too perfect. So yeah, that happens, and then there's also like in between the first verse and the first chorus and the second verse, they also stay minor, which like in this sort of like just the bass and the guitar have this little moment, like sort of unresolved moment. It's interesting how, like, I think that I just have an appreciation for songs that are actually in a minor key but don't sound like it. Like, I think that's really cool. That's something I actually have a genuine, consistent appreciation for whenever I hear it. And I think this song has that trick to it. So, man.
What is minor that sounds like it's not minor?
So, in a songs that are in a... Like, the key of the song is based on, like, the root chord of the song. So, like, wherever it goes back to and wherever you resolve to in the end of like any given section or melodic passage. So like the key of this song is minor because the first chord of every chorus is a minor chord, and it just cycles back to that every time. And I should say that just describing it that way doesn't mean that every song that can be described that way is in a minor key. I I just think that this one, that there's so much chord cycling going on that, like, it doesn't settle on any one major. Like, it kind of settles on the relative major a little bit by going back to it a little more often than that. But I think that that, plus the fact that that little post-chorus, pre-verse part is also minor, I'm convinced that this is, like, a secretly minor key song. That, like, it's, like, you know, and if this has any devotional element to it, like, definitely that kind of music can be both major and minor key. Like, the key of a devotional song doesn't really change how devotional it is.
Right, but I mean, how does it present otherwise? Like, how is it a secret minor song? Like, is it because it's
so sunny and poppy, yeah, and it does go hit the major chord a lot, and, like, the harmonies hit those majors, like, in a lot of the hook parts. But there's so many strange feelings as I listen to it, as it cycles back to that minor, and it just doesn't resolve itself in a way that a major key song does for me. That's the armchair analysis, literally armchair analysis of that song, as we reside in the armchairs. I feel like any final thoughts? Anything you got? Anything else?
No. I mean, I would not say that it sucks.
I like that.
Yeah, it doesn't suck.
I would say it does not suck also.
I got some weird lyrics.
I actually wanted to read a part of the Wikipedia page, but my phone is... Oh, it's under my leg. The Wikipedia page for this song had a funny line, because I like Wikipedia pages that are written editorially, and you can tell the editorial aspect of it just from the way they, like, transition from thought to thought sometimes. It's not even about, like, what they're saying. It's more about just, like, the voice they're writing in. This said... After the unexpected major success of Grant's previous single, Baby Baby, which topped both the United States Billboard Hot 100 and Adult Contemporary charts, there seemed the question on how to follow it up. The chosen single was Every Heartbeat.
The chosen single.
There seemed the question. I just love that. I love that, like, who is in behind the writing of the Amy Grant, like, you know, hagiography that is Wikipedia. I just had to stick that in there. I'm sorry. So Every Heartbeat, produced by Brown Bannister, co-written by Wayne Kirkpatrick and Charlie Peacock and Amy Grant, none of which names are meaningful to me. It's just a bizarre thing by Amy Grant's people and some session people to make her a huge secular star.
Yeah, which they accomplished that goal.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Album sold a lot of copies.
To everyone's surprise, they had to come up with this as a follow-up single.
There seemed the question, and the question was the question was answered.
The chosen single.
So
I've got it up here, Spencer, if you want me to give you a number, and then, or you want me to look up the billboard.
Right? I want you to give me the number, because I now have to. I can look up the year pretty quickly.
Chris, would you please read that number?
Yeah, we need a number.
1,324.
Okay, so that's 93. And that's the 24th most popular song from 1993.
Yes.
We're going to be, I wonder if we're going to be in a very different world. Oh. 24, right?
Yeah. I'm making Sean plug his ears.
Oh, really? Interesting. Holy God, what the hell is this? This song is called Diddy, and it is by a band called Paperboy. Is this Atlanta? Is this, like, you guys watch Atlanta, right? This guy was a rapper. That's all I'm going to say. He was a rapper named Paperboy. This is interesting. I hope Sean has seen Atlanta. All right, this is from 1993. Good God. What the hell is going to happen? I can't wait. Our first rap song, though. That's fun. Chris, thank you for being the guest on this show.
Thanks for having me.
Go listen to House 2, everybody. Eve, thanks for your expertise.
Thanks for the surprise invitation.
And personal, very invaluable knowledge. I don't think Every Heartbeat sucks. I really like it. We'll find out if Diddy sucks on Does Your Favorite Song Suck?